Blog Talk Radio.
Cyprus have done on this day or before this day when they were supposed to report all of their income. Among the birthdays today, one of the greatest geniuses of all time, inventor, painter, scholar, sculptor, Leonardo da Vinci, born in 1452. The first British explorer to explore the Antarctic, Sir James Clark Ross, born on this day. The first woman who was a surgeon, graduated to be a surgeon in America, Mary Harris Thompson. A. Philip Randolph, the longtime black president of the Black Sleeping Car Porters Union. A standard for ASA, no wonder he never used it. Of course, in the FDR's history of his administration, his undersecretary of state, who he went to prep school with, had a thing for black sleeping car porters, and the Secret Service warned FDR that this guy was becoming an embarrassment. He was married, like a lot of gay men or bisexual men or guys who switch back and forth. He had children, and one of his sons did write about his father's predilections. And FDR kind of laughed it off. Remember, these are old school Thai, that crowd, and they tend to look, if at all, differently upon the peccadilloes or preferences of their fellow social class. You'll find this is our prediction. Because of all this sexual preference, political agitation, propaganda, bullying, and threats, we forecast that these people who have embraced this agenda, despite their denials, whether male or female, could very well be outed by this very aggressive promotion of these agendas. We shall see what we shall see. You will discover the term beard, which is a definition of a woman, a straight woman, who covers for a gay man. It could be even be in marriage. And then the term merkin for a man, straight man who covers for a lesbian woman. It's going to be very interesting. Among the other birthdays today, we had famous painter Thomas Hart Benton, born in 1889. This is a day cursed for people in the Far East. It's an interesting day. The grandfather of this fat dictator and totalitarian in North Korea. His grandfather, Kim Il-sung the First, was born on this day. His son was born on this day in 1942. So we have the son, and so the grandson is currently rattling the fins of his missiles. I think this is a put-up job that to deflect people's attention from the real issues of the financial meltdown in Cyprus and these agendas that are ongoing. Harold Washington was born on this day in 1922. He was a congressman. He got into some trouble with the government, but he got out of it. And I think we will play the interview that he gave, or the speech that he gave when he ran for mayor of Chicago. Now, I have a connection. I happened to be in Chicago at that time, and I was walking past City Hall. All of a sudden, an ambulance pulls up, and I said, I said to my companion, friend I was visiting, somebody important must be sick. Well, it turned out that Harold Washington had a heart attack and had died at his desk. A lot of these strange things have been going on in my life. Anyway, here we go. We're going to play his speech where he campaigned for Chicago mayor.
I think your mayor is a wonderful fellow, but I depart radically from him when he says that he would hope that I would have all the good qualities of past mayors. There are no good qualities of past mayors to be had. None. 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 I did not mourn at the bier of the late mayor. I regret anyone dying. I have no regrets about him leaving. He was a racist from the core, head to toe and hip to hip. There's no danger or doubt about it. And he spewed and fawned and oppressed black people to the point that some of them thought that was the way they were supposed to live. Just like some slaves under the plantation thought that was the way they're supposed to live. I give no hosannas to a racist, nor do I appreciate or respect his son. If his name were anything other than Daley, his campaign would be a joke. He has nothing to offer anybody but a bent-up tin can smile, no background, and he runs on the legacy of his name, an insult to common sense and decency. Everything I've ever got in the world, I worked for it. Nobody gave me anything. And although I may sound abrasive, I have no malice toward anybody. I have a job to do. I've got places to go and things to do. And I approach this job just like any masterful surgeon. When you have to cut out a cancer, I cut it out with no emotion. Get it out. Get it out. This dominant culture may have messed up my pocket, but they haven't messed up my head one bit. So I approach this awesome job with pride. Pride in my community. Pride in the ability of my community to rouse up as though they had been a sleeping giant and to recognize that there is a responsibility that they have that they cannot shirk. Nobody else is going to shoulder that burden. I believe in the powers of redemption, and I simply cannot believe in the God I worship that he would permit us to sit on this earth for 400 years, or rather in this country for 400 years, and suffer the indignities which we have suffered, piled time after time, high after high, and so heavy it has almost broken the backs of one of the most powerful people in this world. I can't believe there is no redemption. But that redemption is not going to come out in hatred. It's going to come out in positive attitude toward our fellow man. I represent, and you represent, the fruit of the loom, the best this world has to offer. We've been through the crucible. We've been through the crucible. And we have come out with strong and powerful tensile strength. We are high and good and moral people. We have no explanations to give to anybody. We don't have to explain our existence. We don't have to explain the thing that we want to a part of the political power of this country. Not to suppress anybody, but to add our good. We've come into the 1980s with an understanding that we have not just a right, but a responsibility to give the best that we have to a society. We want to give it. And we're going to give it if we have to beat them across the head and knock them down and make them take it. We're going to give it to them.
By chance, Harold doesn't win, runs a close second. Some will say, your vote was wasted. No. I would rather vote for something I want and not get it than vote for something I don't want and get it. And that's been the case in Chicago all these years. But I think the intelligence of Chicagoans will result in quite conceivably can be a victory for Harold. And to my white fellow Chicagoans, I say this transcends race. It involves vision. It involves self-respect for yourself and for your intelligence, which I shall exercise on that day when I vote for Harold Washington.
I don't support the rights of people because I'm a politician. I support the rights of people because it's deep within me, a natural part of my own development. I am the outgrowth, not of just father and mother. I am the result of 400 some odd years of struggle. Phantom, man's inhumanity to man, a struggling group of people who are trying to not just abide, have made up their mind that they're not just going to survive, but will prevail on a coalitional basis with all other people, so it follows us night and day. That when people cry for help, whether they're Chinese Coolies, or South African Bantus, or Serfs in Russia, or South African held in bondage, or gay and lesbians pushed around, that I'll be there and defending them and supporting them. That's a big deal. That's what the fight is all about. And that's what we're all about. We don't want anything we don't earn. We're not taking anybody from anything. We just want a fair share for all the people in this city. Now, I happen to be talking to a black audience. But you understand that I've got to be fair to everybody. And I will be fair to everybody. But I'm going to insist that for the first time, this city is fair to you. Are you with me? I got a witness. I better quit while I'm ahead. Certainly, goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life. And I shall dwell on the fifth floor of City Hall. Thank you. In the past, you have done so much to make this community a tight-knit, wonderful, productive community. You've done so much that I'm going to give family. You've done so much I'm going to give you all I've got, everything I've got. I wouldn't give it to anybody else. I saved it for you because I want you to have it, every one of you. You know what it is? I'm going to be your mayor for the next 20 years.
Well, Harold Washington wasn't the mayor for the next 20 years. When I was in Chicago in 1988, and as I said, I was walking by City Hall, the ambulance pulls up, and I thought, well, I said to my friend, somebody important got sick. Well, it turned out somebody, number one person in Chicago, died. So it's kind of interesting. Among the other birthdays today, we have, you like Cadbury chocolates, the great English chocolates. I don't know what the quality of them are now. Mr. Cadbury was born on this day. Remember Bewitched, the TV program? Elizabeth Montgomery. Great English conductor. I think he taught at Indiana School of Music, Indiana University, which is also a very good music school. Neville Mariner made quite a few recordings. Remember the Grateful Dead, another musician, rock musician. I remember living in Haight-Ashbury, Phil Lesh, born on this day. And, of course, we have that awful Kim Il-sung, the son and the father. And then remember Heloise Hintz? She was born on this day. Among the deaths, it's also a famous opera in 1605, Boris Godunov. And, of course, on April 15th, Abe Lincoln was shot. Now, there's a theory discussed with other people who studied the assassination of Abraham Lincoln. There's a theory that his wife, Mary Todd Lincoln, had some problems, mental problems, stability, that she carried a gun. She was also taking a narcotic at the time, that she may have shot him accidentally, may have shot her husband accidentally. It's quite interesting that the son, Robert, who was in the Union Army. He insisted that he drop out of Harvard and serve in the Army like everybody else. It was to his credit. He destroyed a lot of the papers, in fact, most of them, that were involved any connection to his father's assassination. Also, getting back to my Illinois history, I used to double date with Pat Butler, who was dating one of the descendant of the Todds. Now, there was, I don't know if any of these people are still living, there was insanity in that family. And, of course, Mary Todd and had some problems. In fact, her son put her in an insane asylum, as I recall. One of my favorite actors with his gravelly voice, rare film he starred in, Pancho Villa. Wallace Beery died on this day. This guy was a Roman Catholic, to our shame. He was also an anti-Semite. Gerald L.K. Smith, he was a radio program like Father Coughlin during that period. And finally, they had to throw him off the air, and the Pope ordered Father Coughlin, who was out of Detroit, to shut up and restrict his sermons to the church and get off the air. Richard Conte, who played a lot of gangster roles and related. He died at a young age. Two French authors, and Jean-Paul Sartre, who was pushed existentialism, as I think that's what it is. John Genet, who did several films. He was gay. He served in French. He was in a French prison, I believe, and he several films about his predilections. And Greta Garbo, she wanted to be alone, and she died on this day. Among the events today, President Taft, the biggest, fattest man ever to serve in the White House and also on the U.S. Supreme Court, one of his campaign things was get on a raft with Taft. Well, when he got on a horse, when he was Governor General of the Philippines, everybody thought this was cruelty to the horse because he was over 300 pounds. We're going to play his when he was speech of his, because it's rare. But he did on this day throw out the first president throw out a baseball at a baseball opening game. But here he is. We're playing this for his voice. He gave a speech at one of the Republican conventions, and he is the father of Robert Taft, who was known as Mr. Republican, a U.S. Senator from Ohio, and he had a son who later became governor, and I think there was one who became attorney general. The Taft family was very powerful and long established in the state of Ohio, but here is the founding father.
As the Republican platform says, the welfare of the farmer is vital to that of the whole country. The prosperity of the country rests usually upon the prosperity of agriculture. Just now, one of the strongest hopes of returning good times is based on the business which the farmers' crops are to afford. The Republican Party, during the last 12 years, has accomplished extraordinary work in bringing the resources of the national government to the aid of the farmer. He is vitally interested in the restraining of excessive and unduly discriminating railroad rates, in the enforcement of the pure food law, in the promotion of scientific agriculture, and in increasing the comforts of country life, as by the extension of free rural delivery and the building of good roads. The free delivery in the postal service now reaches millions of our citizens and will be extended until every community in the land receives its full benefit. Everyone recognizes the essential and economic advantages of good country roads maintained more and more largely at public expense and less at the expense of the abutting owner. The policies of the present administration have most industriously promoted all these objects and cannot fail to commend themselves to the farmer's approval. It is difficult to see how, with his intelligent appreciation of the threat to business prosperity involved in democratic success at the polls, he can do otherwise than give his full and hearty support to the continuation of the policies of the present administration under Republican auspices.
Now, William Howard Taft ended his career in a position that he really wanted, and that was Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court, and that's how he ended his life. Now, when he ran, he succeeded Teddy Roosevelt after Teddy Roosevelt served two terms as president. First one was succeeding William McKinley, who was assassinated and then was elected in his own right. Teddy Roosevelt decided that Taft was not that much of a progressive, and that's a dangerous word, and that he didn't push a lot of the things that Teddy Roosevelt thought should be pushed by his successor, who was William Howard Taft. So Teddy Roosevelt literally threw his hat and his gun in the ring, and Woodrow Wilson was the Democratic Party's candidate for president. This third party thing killed the chances of William Howard Taft being reelected in his own right. So I guess they had to install a special tub in the White House because Taft was over 300 pounds, and I guess they had to get rid of the cows because Woodrow Wilson was elected president and Teddy Roosevelt was the spoiler. Among the other events today, as I said, the in 1806, James Ross discovered the North Pole. A lot of medical things on this day. Some of them are controversial. The first American school for the deaf, I think it was Gauntlet, was set up in 1850. In 1874, New York legislature passed legislation compelling compulsory education. And, of course, William Howard Taft threw out the first baseball. 1922-23, Frederick Banting, Dr. Frederick Banting, Charles Best, and John McLeod claimed to have discovered insulin, and Banting later got a Nobel Prize for that. However, there is a guy named Nicolae Popescu, a Romanian, who claimed in 1916 that he discovered insulin, and he discovered by working with dogs, removing their pancreas. So there's some dispute about that, and this often happens in these medical breakthroughs that there are people working quietly who do not get the publicity, but in fact actually were the first, and they were the groundbreakers for other people who got the media and to promote what they had achieved, but their work was done by somebody previously. So it's very interesting how these things happen. I don't know what, I'll look up more on Nicolae Popescu. It's a fascinating guy. Now, Banting worked, he was in, served in World War I, a medical officer, and he served in World War II, and he was on a plane in Gander, Newfoundland, where planes were being ferried over to England because the RAF had lost a lot of their planes in the Battle of Britain. And he was killed, and he was flying over to England on one of these planes, and a plane crashed in Newfoundland, and he was killed. On this day also, FDR was buried at his home in Hyde Park. Ray Kroc, who my dad knew, unfortunately he didn't buy any stock, set up the first McDonald's as we know it in near my school in Des Plaines, Illinois. And I worked there very briefly. One of the guys I remember worked there later became the chairman of the board of McDonald Corporation. In those days, hamburgers, I think, were 10 cents. French fries were 10 or 15 cents. Real milkshakes were 15 cents, I think. And they had really good fish sandwiches. And, of course, I've eaten McDonald's around the world, and I must say it's consistent, what I refer to as the same sweaty buns. Excuse me. Now, this is interesting. It's very relevant to today. In 1957, Congress decided, since the post office was a government, a fully controlled organization and corporation, until Richard Nixon decided to make that mistake, there were two deliveries on Saturday. There were three deliveries during the week. Now, Congress decided to stop the Saturday delivery, but there was such a howl that Congress appropriated a $41 million to restore Saturday deliveries. Now, we're faced with that situation here 66 years later, where the semi-private corporation that the U.S. Post Office has become is talking and wants to stop Saturday domestic deliveries or residential deliveries. And, of course, one of the problems with the post office, we'll get into that another day, because I did work in the federal courthouse where we had a post office, and there's a lot of things that I remember and I can that I witnessed and I can talk about in future broadcasts. This is very relevant to Kathleen Carroll, who's the vice president of Associated Press, and she's come out with this pronouncement that they're going to redefine the word illegal and as it relates to illegal immigrant. Well, first of all, not everybody who crosses our borders illegally is an immigrant. This is one of the political fictions, and we see this here all the time here in California, that many of the people, and I know some of these people, and I worked with some of them in the late 60s when I came to work here in California before I went back to school, that people come from South America, Canada. They come here to work, to get money, to send back to their families or to get a little experience. They don't come down here and come up here to go to civic school to become a U.S. citizen. That is political fiction. One of the reasons that we have so many illegals coming here is because American corporations have been exploiters of countries, especially in South America. United Fruit, Anaconda Copper, Bill Buckley's father was an oil buccaneer in Mexico. That's why the Mexican government decided to set up their own monopoly to control and to sell their own oil. And that's been one of the problems, because our greedy companies have made it difficult for those people to make a living, you know, on their side of the border. But otherwise, and I've been told this, that they would stay down there because they want to stick with their families. It's very difficult for somebody, wherever they are around the world, to whether they're legally there as a worker or whether they're there in the Middle East or here. There is also some illegals in Canada. It's difficult for them to, because they're always worried and looking over their shoulder if immigration is going to be coming after them and deporting them, and they can't come back. So, and also, if you look up Black's Dictionary, which is the law dictionary, if you look up in our the U.S. Code, the term illegal means just that, illegal. And it's people who are here without going through immigration and naturalization, who have crossed our borders, whether it's north or south, east or west, whether they're white, brown, or yellow, or black, and there are all kinds of illegal aliens in this country, they are illegal. And AP and all the rest are not going to change that. Also, Ms. Carroll is on the board of the Pulitzer Committee. Now, it's very interesting because on the board of the Pulitzer Committee, which chooses the people who get the Pulitzer Prize, is Catherine Weymouth, who is the granddaughter of the late publisher Catherine Graham, whose father was of Jewish heritage. I don't know if he practiced, but she later converted to Lutheranism. She also worked at the San Francisco Chronicle. Now, her son had a daughter, Catherine Waymer, and I guess that's her married name. I don't know what she practices, but she's on a Pulitzer Committee. Now, that is very relevant to the next person, next event. In 1981, a black writer at the Washington Post, Janet Cook, came up with this fiction about an 8-year-old heroin addict in public housing, and she wrote articles about it, total fiction, and she got a Pulitzer for it. At the New York Times, which is also a Jewish heritage newspaper, the Oakes family, some of them anglicized it to O-A-K-S, others used the original German, O-C-H-S, came from Tennessee. They had their Pulitzer Prize scandals, starting with Walter Durrani, who was their correspondent in Moscow during the 30s, and Stalin totally co-opted this guy with providing him with all the vodka he could drink, a houseboy, and I don't know what that relationship was, and a car. And Walter Durrani censored and covered up the deliberate starvation of the Kulaks. An estimated 30 million people were starved to death by Stalin and his goons because these people didn't want collectivization of their farms. Yet Walter Durrani got a Pulitzer Prize, and it was never returned by the New York Times. There's another scandal involving a black who also at the New York Times, a black writer, who also got a Pulitzer Prize. I think he had to give it back. But these scandals with these organizations that give out these prizes or decide who's going to get a prize really raises some questions. And then, of course, another New Yorker, Leanna Helmsley, another arrogant public figure, she was convicted of income tax fraud. Now, a Goodwill employee informed me that he works in the thrift store, in the clothes section of the Goodwill Corporation. It's supposed to be a charity nonprofit. They get donations from clothes. Now, we're not trying to discourage people from donating clothes. However, he says, and I've heard this from other people in other nonprofit thrift stores, that these clothes may be contaminated because they are not washed by the recipient, and they're not washed, maybe not washed or decontaminated by the donor. And these boxes that you see around, there's controversy about them. So word to the wise, people have gotten sick, and with diseases like MRSA, which eats your skin, and there's no cure for that. If you buy clothes, even shoes, decontaminate them, wash them in hot water and a good soap, and maybe even bleach. So ignorance is not bliss. It can hurt, harm, and kill you in some of these cases. We'll be back on Wednesday at 4 p.m. We've got a slight cold, and we'll follow up more on this and then the bicycle scandals. It seems that these bicycle propaganda, some of them have no background in transportation issues, but one person in the city has a background in women's study. What relevance that has to determining transportation policy, none of us have figured that one out. Anyway, they're using their influence to get grants to presumably study projects, road projects and bicycle lanes that they want for their group, and they're using their political influence to influence pedal, and that's a federal felony. So we'll get into that come Wednesday, as well as updates on the unwashed clothing that you buy at thrift stores. So it's Peter Paul Brazola. We'll end with our usual politics and poker. I don't know if William Howard Taft played poker. I don't even know if Harold Washington did. But anyway, we'll end with our usual theme, politics and poker.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Okay, Tony, what are you going to do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Me too. Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year. Big ace.
Ace bet.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where's the sound?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Here goes.
Possible straight, possible flush, nothing.
Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
How's about we should make Jack Riley the guy?
Which Riley are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y?
I say, neither one. I never even met 'em.
I say, when you got a pair of jacks, bet 'em.
Politics and poker, politics and poker. Shuffle up the cards and find the joker. Neither game's for children, neither game is rough. Decisions, decisions, like
who to pick. Politics or poker, which is more important?
Paratrade.
Venom.
Little trade, good as gold.
Well, we don't know if these trades are going to be good as gold or if even going to be able to get gold. We'll be back Wednesday at 4 p.m. This is Peter Paul Brazola. Go to our Amicus Veritas YouTube site AMICUSVERITAS. Good night.